Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Toonaries podcast is proudly sponsored by Inline Eco, your trusted partner in asbestos removal and re-roofing services across Ireland. Your peace of mind and safety are our top priorities. For more information, visit inlineeco.ie.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Toonaries podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
Our today's guest is the CEO of Orbostown Youth Detention Facility, Damien Horan. How are you?
I'm good. I'd love to be the CEO. They call me the director of Orbostown Children's Campus, and I'm delighted to be here, and thanks very much for the invitation. I look forward to having a fairly wide range of conversation with you guys over the next hour or so.
The conversation, like even just to be sitting here, like I can imagine how many people would be just fascinated. I don't think this has ever been done before for somebody with us anyway, for somebody to come on and talk about what it is to be working inside a detention centre for children.
I think Orbostown is a unique facility. It's a national facility, so it looks after all young people in conflict with the law under the age of 18. So they can be remanded or detained under the age of 18 for whatever offences, waiting on the finding of guilt or otherwise. We're very fortunate to be located in North County Dublin, which is a rural agricultural area, and we're very conscious of our community and the neighbourhood within which we sit. So there's a corporate social responsibility element to that in terms of how we allow the young people to interact with the community, and that's done through Meals on Wheels and the Senior Citizens Christmas Party and different events throughout the year to support stuff that's going on in the community.
How does one become director of Orbostown? What was your route to that job?
Oh my God, it was a very circuitous route, I suppose. I've played GAA all my life, you know, played horn of football with a local club called O'Toole's, who were also steeped in history and from the North Inner City. Some of the members of O'Toole's were in Crow Park on Bloody Sunday and were shot. So it was a really historic club, but I played at that club all my life, and one evening I was out training. I just finished college, and a guy off the team said to me, "Yeah, you do something with sport, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." He says, "We're looking for a PE teacher where I work." And I said, "Where do you work?" And he said, "A place called Trinity House School," which at the time was the most secure facility for young people in conflict with law in Ireland. So I sent in a CV, did an interview, got a job as a PE teacher, and I used to cycle out from town out to Trinity House. Took me about an hour and 10 minutes. Cycle back in the evenings. And those days I was cycling home saying, "This place is mad. What are you doing?" Like, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. But you find a rhythm then with the kids, and you find the name and you find the niche. And I suppose sport was probably my thing with the kids. You were able to work with them through sport and get behind some of the reasons they were in detention, I suppose. And then I moved into a residential social care worker job, which gave me an opportunity to work with a smaller group of kids, perhaps, but on a more intimate basis and a more intensive basis, that, you know, you could spend more time with them. You'd have a key child, so you'd be the advocate for that young person. So you'd be looking after all their needs. You'd be looking after their placement plans, their education, their care, etc., etc. After a while doing that, then I became a unit manager, became a deputy director. And the last 3 years, I've become the director of Orbostown Children's Detention Campus, which came about as a result of an amalgamation of all the youth detention facilities that were in the country at this point. It goes back to some very forward-thinking people in the 80s and 90s trying to figure out how we're going to look after young people in conflict with the law in a different way, other than sending them to prison. Because up until maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago, kids our age were sent to St. Pat's, looked after by prison officers in a prison facility. So Oberstown is completely different to that in terms of what we do with the kids. It's a completely relationship-based model. We have small family-like units with a maximum of 8 kids in each unit, and a team of around 15 people to look after them throughout the 24 hours. There's a separate night team who look after that, and the night people who look after them are one of the most skilled group of people they ever come across, because nighttime is a very lonely time. It can be very challenging time for young people who might be in detention for the first time, or who might not be good in the dark, and that's a reality for some of our kids, who might not sleep well. So the skill that the guys have at night time in terms of using their brain and their tongue is really impressive, because there's much less people around at night time, so they have to have that ability to engage with the kids at night time to manage them. During the day then, kids are looked after by residents or social care workers, looked after by teachers and activity staff.
What kind of activities do they
have? So, I mean, if I'll describe a typical day perhaps, and that'll give you a sense of it, you know. So all our kids, most of our kids don't go to school when they're outside of Overstown. When they come to Overstown, they all go to school. Because for me and for everybody up there, this represents an opportunity to intensively approach all the deficits that they've had over the last 12 to 13, 14 years. So we have a framework that we call KEHOP. So we look after their care needs, education needs, health needs, offending behaviour needs, and preparation for leaving needs. And we do that within this framework we call the placement planning process. Broadly speaking, every 6 to 8 weeks, we'll have a meeting to see if the kids are meeting their milestones. And every stakeholder involved with the young person will be involved with that. But a typical day will involve going to school. We've won the greatest schools in Ireland, I reckon, because it's run on a national school curriculum, but delivers everything from leaving cert to junior cert to national schools to national school curriculum. And what that does then, it gives us the ability to create an individual education plan. So if you've come in and you can't read or write, we'll manage that. We'll help you to read and write. If you've come in and you're halfway through your junior cert, we'll help you achieve your junior cert. At the minute, there's 7 or 8 lads sitting there leaving cert and junior cert up above, and that's significant. So being able to individualise that plan is really important, because everybody learns differently. Everyone learns at a different pace, and they come into us at different places. So to be able to get them to those state exams is really important. But in between that then, there's other exams like QQI qualifications, FITAC qualifications, that are much tighter, that don't depend on a calendar year. So we're able to get kids a lot of qualifications. And what it really does, it contributes to us providing them with opportunities to maximise their potential, because we want the kids to leave there with a portfolio of qualifications, experiences, having addressed their offending behaviour through the suite of programmes that we have. And, you know, 2 or 3 of the programmes might be for you, 2 or 3 might be for you. So we're able to individualise that. So school runs from, I don't know, 9:30 to 3:30.
What's your, you know, you've normal prison for men. What's the difference in the structure for a young person?
Yeah.
What's the difference in the two facilities, normal prison and Overstown?
So
what time, like throughout the day, what time do they get up?
Oh, they're out all day. They're out all day. So we got the school.
No cells or anything like that?
We call them bedrooms. They're individual rooms with ensuite facilities and TVs and music and all that crack. They're a very high standard, because a number of years ago, and it's not a million years ago, maybe 20 years ago, there were no toilets in the bedrooms in where the kids stayed. And, you know, one of the craziest things in the world was there was a Jack's run at 11 o'clock every night.
Yeah.
You'd have to wait for 2 staff to let you out to the toilet. So big 16 and a half, 17-year-old, you have gone out to the corridor to go to the toilet. Like, so from a dignity and respect perspective, from a safety perspective, from a health perspective, from a fire perspective, all those elements were taken into consideration. And all the new rooms that were built have these showers and toilets in them, the TV screens, the radios, etc., safety features in it, all up to a higher standard, which helps, because, like I said, nighttime is a dodgy time, so you have your telly, you have your radio, you have someone to talk to, and you have a bit of comfort. But it differs an awful lot from prison, because there's no, you know, 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock, you got the school, come back to the unit then, we'd have a cup of tea and a sandwich or something. Then you go up to activities. So activities is an after school service that we provide, broadly speaking, say from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock. And we try to collaborate as much with school as possible in the activity. So there's a continuity of service there. So if you're at something in school, we might be able to carry it on in the evening activities. But through that process, we've been able to partner with some industry leaders like Java Republic and create a barista training program for the majority of young people that go through the place. We partnered with Image Fitness. So lots of the kids go through the place as physical fitness instructors.
Yeah.
And that's creating opportunities and pathways into employment, into maximising their potential. The exhibition with Emma last year through Goshka was a significant piece of work. And, you know, like, we've looked at the shaky bridge there. We've brought you down the shaky bridge. Yeah.
Thank you.
But there's one other spectacular piece in the collection, I suppose, and it's probably my favourite. It's a guy who and there's in the exhibition there were these little pen pictures, you know, in the exhibition, and it says, when I came into Orwestown, I couldn't read or write, I couldn't find my way, couldn't do anything, very dark place. But being able to work in Orwestown, I learned to read and write, I learned to develop, blah 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 blah. And it's a very powerful message.
Mm.
But his painting is pulling back a grey curtain to reveal colour, to reveal, you know, respect, dignity, words. It's very Banksy-like, and it was a significant piece of art. So he, in Orwestown, he did exams, he did qualifications. He worked up in the kitchen, you know, in the catering department. Lovely young fella, great bit of stuff. About 6 or 8 weeks ago, at 19 years of age, he was knocked down by a bus and killed.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And you have to wonder, he left, he was due to get married shortly, and just taken away like that, and the picture is usually impactful. So I mean, so that's in the activities piece.
Mm.
We try and prepare them for life after Orwestown. We're trying skills training. I call it vocational training. They tell me it's an old-fashioned phrase, but I know what I mean by it, that, you know, woodwork, carpentry, metalwork. And so that collaboration that goes on between the school and between the activities is significant.
What about a lot of these kids are traumatised?
Yeah.
You know I mean?
Yeah.
It's grand having school.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
But what do you do?
So, we have an on-site ACTS team, Assessment, Consultation, Therapeutic Services team. We have an on-site FCAMS team who work in conjunction with our care staff and our key workers in a multidisciplinary team approach to try and get behind the behaviour and really understand what's causing the kids to behave the way they do, and put plans in place under a key hub framework in that placement planning process. And then we have a head of programmes who delivers a suite of programmes. We've maybe 15 or 20 programmes there that kids can access, victim empathy, lads, dads for lads, all the different elements that be really important in terms of getting that holistic approach, not just trying to deal with one element of somebody's behaviour, one element of somebody's character. We try to look at it from a very rounded picture and create a more rounded young person who can leave and contribute to society.
Yeah.
So that's how we try.
Do you have drug counsellors and psychologists and stuff working within there as well?
We have access to that. See, the drug counselling, like, lots of our kids will come in. I'm going to say maybe 70-80% of our kids are recreational drug users. In normal time, I've come across very few addicts.
Yeah.
They'd be
a bit young.
Yeah, they're at a bit of this, they're at a bit of that. Now, I know you had Shawnee Kinsland here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But Shawnee, I worked with Shawnee maybe 30 years ago, and he came out to see us about 3 months ago, you know. And it's always an anxious time when you meet up with someone, you know, after they've travelled their journey and all. So I met him down the cup of tea room up on the top floor, you know, and straight away there was a big hug. Damien, where's all your black hair gone? He said.
And he've none.
I said, black hair. To see young fellas grow and come back and come out like that is really important.
Actually,
some of the work that we do doesn't land and doesn't really sit until they're older, because us men, believe it or not, we mature much slower than ladies.
Yeah. 100%.
So the messaging we're delivering, the education, the qualifications, the relationships, the how to do stuff is really important. But some of that takes a little while to land.
Yeah.
One of the key features of Auberstown, and it's called out in our strategy 22-26. Goal number one, that the kids are at the front and centre of what we do in terms of rights-based participative approach. We have a huge participation approach up there. That it's like a customer feedback, if that makes sense. We're just wrapping up a review of a participation strategy at the minute. Anne O'Donnell and Laura Lundy, one of the biggest experts in this field, has helped the campus work with this. We've campus councils. We have kids on interviews for senior managers. So when I was interviewed for the director's job, I was interviewed by two guys, one from Limerick and one from Dublin, and they grilled me, and the questions were very astute, you know. And if I gave them the answers that they wanted, I wouldn't have got the job.
Yeah.
I gave them the answers that they didn't want, and it meant actually he, you know, there's something there. There's a bit of steel there. He's not just saying for the sake of it, because. What might be the easy answer is not necessarily the right answer. So the participation piece and the kids being involved in everything we do allows us shape some of the programmes and some of the activity on campus. So
you mentioned Shiny. When Shiny spoke to us, no, 30 years ago, it was a long time ago, but he had an awful time of it in Trinity Court or Trinity House with bullying and stuff like that. And kids are immature, these things happen. But how do you manage the difficult side if you have, as Timmy said, a lot of traumatised young people in together? There's going to be issues. Like, how do you manage that? And, you know, in a regular detention facility, you might have sex offenders or people that commit crimes against children and women have to be separated. Yeah. How do you manage that?
So we don't categorise. You know, part of our responsibility is to accept the kids as they come in. It's to be non-judgmental, and it's to help them become self-determined, you know, as part of the process. So we don't segregate, but what we do with the key workers, with the key hub framework, and with the individual placement plans. So Damien Hernan would have an individual placement plan to say, these are his assessed needs, this isn't what needs to happen, and all the services that we need, we bring them in as insofar as possible. Now, notwithstanding that, there are some challenges getting different services involved out in the community. Sometimes it's very hard to access the services, but we're fortunate that we have an ACTS team on site and FCAMS on site. So there's a multidisciplinary team approach to try and, you know, create a better space for that young person.
How many people are inside in the centre at one time then?
So we've maximum capacity of 46 at the minute. So 40 lads and six girls.
Do the mix?
They'd mix in school and they'd mix in activities and stuff like that, but they have separate units.
Yeah.
I mean, we have six units fully operational now. And like I said, a maximum of 8 beds in each unit.
Yeah. So is there no, like, protection landing?
Nah.
There's no need?
Nah. We try and resolve stuff in a restorative way.
Yeah.
We try and have conversations. You might have to have a young lad from time to time on what we'd call an individual recovery plan. He'll be going through a bit of a difficult time, might be getting targeted by others, or might be targeting others. But we have to work it out, lads, because there's no protection.
What would the difference be for somebody going to Auberstown then to say St. Pat's?
Yeah.
What's the difference? Like, they're the same age. Is it the crime?
Well, St. Pat's
is gone.
That's St. Where the progression unit is now.
Yeah. Right. That part and parcel of what Auberstown has done has allowed
St. Pat's is completely gone.
Has allowed St. Pat's close. So anyone between the age of, and the legislation says 12 to 18, who commits an offence now will end up in Auberstown. But typically the kids are 16, 17. You get a couple of outliers. But so there's no one in Pat's anymore.
That's the progression unit now.
It's the progression unit in Mountjoy, And I've been in it a couple of times.
We were up there ourselves if you want to.
And
it's a lot safer than Pat's was. Yeah. Not even growing up as kids ourselves.
There's reports being written over the years about Pat's.
There's no place for a kid.
That had to be closed. Yeah. I can remember going in to see kids in there in the green overalls with a bit of yellow on them and like shells of young fellas, you know.
And so, the noise, the intimidation, the fear they must have felt.
Yeah, so it's a different model. It's a niche type approach, if you want. Working with young people isn't everybody's cup of tea. Because, like I said, they're a little bit more immature, they're a little bit more challenging from time to time.
And the ego is starting to develop at that age as well.
Of course. But we've a very skilled workforce, you know, who've been at this a long time. Like, the retention rates on the campus for staff, we've staff working there 20 years, 30 years, who've built a bank of knowledge. And that knowledge is always supplemented because we've... we've ongoing training, you know, and, yeah. and there's mandatory training, there's always town mandatory training, there's nice to have training, and we did a little bit of that to the best of our ability just to keep people on point, because goal number two in the strategy is around our staff developing leadership, learning and resilience. Because in order to work in our game, you got to be resilient.
Yeah,
you got to be a leader because you got to step up sometimes, and you got to keep learning. Because if we did what we did 50 years ago with kids, we'd be shooting ourselves in the foot.
Do you know, there might be people know that maybe they might be victims of crime, or they might not be as compassionate or empathetic as me and Timmy towards. Can you explain why the approach that you have is like you provide all these services in a safe place? Yeah. Why that's better for them than in prison like St. Patrick's?
Yeah. So look, I'm a father. There's other fathers in this room. There's other parents in this room. Put yourself in a young person's shoes. Try and experience from their side what it's like. Give them the opportunity. We have a responsibility to give kids an opportunity, because perhaps they've been failed by services, by the state, by whatever, before they've come to us. Yes, they've committed a crime. Yes, they will be sanctioned for that. But that's the sanction. Our job then is to give them that second chance, is to provide that hope, is to give them that platform to go and grow and develop. We don't ignore the victims. Part of the work the kids would do would be around victim empathy and trying to figure out, Jesus, if I wasn't on drugs, I wouldn't have done that. And if you could get rid of drugs, you get rid of 80% of the offences, because they're all connected. So I know that's a big...
And there's a loss of liberty is the ultimate the loss punishment. Of liberty.
Like we had Noel Baker from the Irish Examiner out last year in April or May, I suppose, and you know, he spent a day with us, and he did a very good article in the Irish Examiner, and the online version, he spent a good amount of time with one young person in particular, and the online version, the headline was, Oberstown is a good place, there are people here who give a shit about you.
Yeah.
And the paper version was, Oberstown is a good place, there are people here who care about you. So kids need to feel that. Every kid in the place needs to feel that to grow. If you've no self-esteem, if you can't stand up, but God, it's a shocking place to be. So we have a responsibility to do that. I'm not diminishing any of the offences that have committed. And what we've seen over the last 3 to 4 years is an increase in higher tariff offences. Kids committing more serious offences than we've seen ever.
Like violent offences?
Yeah. Like leading to loss of life.
Yeah.
And at one point, you know, we had 6 or 7 young people there as a result of people losing their lives. That was unheard of in our industry.
Yeah.
They were much smaller, much lower tariff offensive.
What do you think has contributed to that?
Oh, God. We could be here for a while. You know...
Is the country becoming more violent? Are children being exposed to more violence online? That's maybe... Or is, you know, because families, the cost of living, both parents are working and children don't have the guidance.
So I think there's elements of all that contribute to it. You know, I was just going to start talking about my own upbringing and having people around and having support and having neighbours. And there was a phenomenon, you know, in Scotland maybe 20, 30 years ago, latchkey kids living on their own, because there was no parents present.
Mm.
And that's what we also know about lots of our kids, is that they're absent parents through death, through imprisonment, through otherwise. So that support network, that arm around the shoulder, that's someone to guide you, that's someone to bring you, is missing. They're exposed to so much through social media. There's so much pressure through social media, so much pressure through the internet. And I think the world is a much busier place, you know, and there's a lot contributing to it, but I suppose typically the characteristics of our kids, non-school attendance. School gives you rhythm, gives you routine, gives you a peer group. And if we can manage that element a little bit better and be a little more forgiving, whether that's the right word or not, but a little more tolerant, and see how important it is to keep kids in school. And I know there's huge, huge measures being put in place by the Department of Education, but it's a really important feature of life. And then you extend that to the community, you extend it to the family. They're really important pillars to have in place as well. Belonging to something, belonging to something, and having something to fall back on. I played sport for a lot longer than I should have. And I spoke a little bit about O'Toole's, the club I was with, and very good club. Came across some super people who helped me, who guided me. It will forever be in my blood and my passion. And I stayed playing a lot longer because there were younger kids coming through. We moved from the north inner city out to a place called Clare Hall. So you have Clare Hall, Airfield and Darndale, those three neighbourhoods in our location. And all the kids were coming through. And as I got older, I used to give some of the youngsters lifts to matches and bring them home, wherever, you know. And one of them asked me a question one day that I will never, ever, ever forget. He says to me, "Dale, do you have a job?" Because most kids, 18 or 19, that I would come across would say, "What do you work at?" There was no history of employment in his family. So that family are at a loss straight away from a rhythm, a routine, self-esteem, purpose, mastery, all those things, a few pound. And it struck me forever. And I told him, "Yeah, I do. This is what I do," blah, blah, blah. And he was kind of blown away. So I give him lifts every now and then to matches, and he's now working, now has a child, is now not in detention, is now doing really well. So all those little...
They need role models, people that they can identify with and relate to that are doing positive things. But that's why, a big reason why we started the podcast, because there's men in prison like that too.
Yeah.
They don't know anybody that's broken out of, that was working. They don't know anybody that lives a life where
they
have a stable relationship and they're not using drugs. Yeah. But by giving people a platform here, we can kind of give them a little bit of a belief that it's there for them too.
So that's why it's really important, the work we do in Norristown, is to give that voice to young people, is to give that platform, create that platform. Because if you don't, it just continues and it spoils out of control and we become America or something where we have these super prisons.
But you're also playing a massive role as well, Damien, because you're probably the first person in their life to treat them with respect and give them a bit of trust and a bit of love. Like, you know,
I could sit here for hours and describe some of the actions of some of the staff on the campus in relation to looking after young people. You know, like, there's kids come in there at night time, fresh from court, who've probably been in court all day, who've probably been picked up the night before. And what they get then is they'll get a cup of tea and a sandwich, they get looked after, they get a bit of warmth, they get a bit of care, and that impression lasts. So we have a huge responsibility to admit kids into their place really well, because you have a forced chance to make a forced impression, forced impression. Staff go out of the way every day of the week to work with these kids, to make positive impressions with them, to help them grow. And you need a bit of tolerance, you need a bit of patience, you need a bit of forgiveness, but you need to be able to walk in their shoes. You need to figure out, Jesus, if I was 14 and killed someone, what would it be like? Would my head be well? Nah.
Yeah.
So a little bit of tolerance, a little bit working with it is really important.
Are all your staff trauma-informed within the centre?
All staff who come onto the campus have to have a total level of qualification in...
Youth work or social care or something like that?
It's social care. It's social care or an associate at the minute, but it's going to move to social care from November because there's a whole registration piece coming in.
The choral piece.
Yeah. But it's on our agenda in the coming years to become more trauma-informed and trauma-responsive. We're rolling out a supervision training model with staff at the minute, which will provide for that level of reflection and that level of understanding, give people an opportunity to bring their best self back to work and actually understand what's going on and what causes this. Because if we can help the kids understand the causes of their issues, maybe we can disrupt that cycle, you know. Mm. But being in Norristown, it ruptures it anyway. Because you give them that rhythm, that routine, you give them school, you give them exercise, you give them food, you give them, like, you know, because I'm from a sporting background, you know, the fitness thing is huge. We've boxing coaches in, we have triathlon coaches in, we have
Joe Redmond. We know him well.
That's who we have. Philly. Yeah. And Philly has been there once or twice. So we've some heavy hitters who have a story, who have travelled a journey, who the kids are able to relate to. Because I'm a grey man in a suit, like, you know, I haven't been in detention. I haven't experienced some of the hardships that the kids have had, but I've some understanding. But others who do fully understand that journey, the kids relate to them and the kids respond.
Do you think the likes of maybe courses around core beliefs and ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, do you think their minds would be able to attain that kind of information, or do you think they're still too young at that age to be a, because myself and James, we do courses within different prisons, and it's all in relation to relationships, core beliefs, adverse childhood experiences. And when the lads see these things and they understand like core beliefs where they're developed as a young child and adverse childhood experiences and how they have a massive contribution to, into why somebody becomes molded in a certain way and gets caught up in crime and violence and drug addiction and homelessness and all these different things, you see them standing back and it's like,
wow,
they're standing there and
like, thinking about their own life.
Yeah. Life bulb goes on.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, wow. And then they're also thinking too that like they have impact. They have kids as well, and it gives them maybe a little bit of a nudge. Yeah, geez, I need to watch.
So you see, it's to do with the levels of maturity. Some of the kids that I've come across be well able to do that. Some of them, it's way beyond.
Yeah.
And this is the point earlier on I was making about the maturity bit, that it's later on that they'll get to that. What we typically see, mid to late 20s, there's a birth of a child, a girlfriend, a boyfriend, whatever it is, a significant moment in your life has an impact. And then you think, actually, wow, what's going on here? So that's when we get calls and letters from lads regularly. Have you got me doing certain results? Have you got me leaving certain results? Have you got this? Have you got that? And we can pull it back.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Together again, you know. But there's... I mean, we discussed some of this on the way down in the car, you know. Some kids are ready and some kids aren't.
Mm.
And if you force it on them...
So you have to kind of tailor each plan.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. We have an individual education plan and we have an individual placement plan. So, you know, our three plans would be completely different
because
we're on completely different pages or different stages. Yeah.
Like, for me, it was my 30s before I actually had that kind of moment. And you said it earlier as well, women get it a lot faster than men as well. And I believe that's very true as well. But for me, in my case, I was in my early 30s before I actually got it and started to say, whoa. But then it was later on when I was started doing a little bit of personal development here and there to grow on 12-step programs or whatever. And I came across ACEs and I came across core beliefs.
Yeah.
And I started to understand the connection to the mind and the emotions and how my emotions are all trapped in the body from experiences in my childhood and traumatic experiences that were in my addiction years. When I started to understand that, all the pieces in the jigsaw were starting to click and the picture started becoming more evident to me. Yeah. And I said, whoa, do you know what? I actually was never a bad person.
Yeah, but
I was never a bad person. All these things contributed into why I behaved in different ways. Now, James said it will ago, there's no justification for...
We should have to take ownership for what
there's no justification for what we've done.
And you have to work through it. And you have to,
take responsibility.
And get through that. And that's it. And the harm caused and the damage caused. Yeah. And that's part of the growth process as well. Because, you know, I think it was Erickson, I could be wrong, but the stages, the life stages of development, you know. But by 6 or 7, you're nearly there,
yeah.
You know. Show me someone at 7 and I'll show you an adult.
Do you know when you were talking about Erickson there?
Yeah.
Because when I was learning about this, and I was in early recovery.
Yeah.
I'd say 2014, 10 years ago, I was doing a level 5 in applied psychology and social studies. I came across Erickson's stage of development, right? So I was looking and reading this. It was around adolescence, you know, identity versus role confusion. You're kind of take on this identity as a kid. You're trying to find your place in the world. So when you have a parent in prison, you have your peers are taking drugs. A lot of people in the area going to prison. Joyriders are looked up to. You feel like this is who I'm supposed to be.
Mm.
And I took on that identity. And I remember thinking to myself, so when I was 27, still walking around wearing the same hoodies, the same trainers, going to the same off license, doing the same thing. I was 15 and I was 27, but I was still the same person.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I went to treatment centre, like 6 months of therapy and then 12 months of aftercare, that I actually became a man.
Yeah.
And I kind of moved away from that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then into the different stage then, do you know?
No, but your early experiences have a huge impact and we've all experienced it at some level, but whatever network you have around you to support that, to help that, is really important. And what we know is some of the kids don't have that network.
Yeah, I was going to ask that question. Have you got kids from probably the care system that maybe don't have visits and they've nobody to go home to? And how do you manage that? And where do they go when they get out?
Well, you see, we are, I suppose we're very fortunate with all the stakeholders we have involved. I'd say we've probably 70 stakeholders involved, and we reach out to them a good lot. We work with different organisations such as Lekaili, YAP and EPIC to form those relationships out in the community. Some of the kids will have probation, bit of probation to do when they leave, so you can manage that. But it's in the community, it's in the family. There's an area of growth there. There's an area of growth from our side, I do believe, in relation to some type of outreach or aftercare pilot that we need to consider. Because we've built the relationships with the kids. They come to this point then and they leave. And our work is done then effectively because somebody else takes it over. But I think we need to test that a little bit by looking at a pilot program that can say, actually, we will release people on permitted absence for a period of time if they've reached their goals, and then have this aftercare piece in or this outreach piece in to give them that leg into the community, to give them that support into the community. So the challenge with some of the kids now that we're facing, because they're leaving at 18 plus, they're in an adult market.
Mm.
So if they don't have a family around them, accommodation becomes an issue.
Mm.
So that's where we have to tap into other stakeholders to try and get benefits around that to help us with that. We do have kids from the care system who sometimes will go back to the care homes if they haven't burnt bridges or whatever. But I suppose big emphasis on family involvement. Try to get families involved in the placement plan and meeting in so far as possible. And the advent of COVID allowed us move into a digital world. So online visits, digital visits were a real benefit for some of the kids because
they went down really well in the prisons.
Yeah.
Do not have the video calls.
Here's the iPad. Have the chat.
People don't have to travel across the country.
And where we are it's remote. It's North County Dublin. There's no direct bus route. You know, so if you were coming from Cork, say you'd be getting a bus to the airport and we'd be picking you up from the airport. And given some of the challenges parents have with other kids, with work, with school, etc., it's sometimes a difficult place to get to. So the video.
The Two Norries podcast is proudly sponsored by Inline Eco, your trusted partner in asbestos removal and re-roofing services across Ireland. Your peace of mind and safety are our top priorities. For more information, visit inlineeco.ie.
The video visits work well, but nothing beats an in-person visit.
You can't beat an in-person visit. And even when I was in prison myself, the visits that you get, and when you get a screen visit,
you're better off just saying, tell them to go away, because you, like, you, there's nothing like seeing somebody sitting, crossing you, feeling them, yeah, looking at the emotion.
Especially for a child, you know, to get embraced.
And they're, like, my kids were young, yeah, you know, and like, particularly my young lad, and it was very, very difficult. But there was a question that popped into my mind there, and say, for example, you have a young person come in, and they've committed a crime, and I don't know how it works, but the crime is bad enough that they get a lengthy sentence, yeah, okay? And you know after 2 years, when they're 18, they're going into the main jail, and they're just after getting all the help and the education that's required to help them on their journey. And then they start developing a bit of a conscience and say, you know what? I was lost before, but I'm really, really trying. You know, I'm waiting this and waiting this. I'm after getting a bit of help. I have a little bit of an understanding around all these different things. How does that work?
So in the last maybe 2 to 3 years, we have, the numbers of kids moving on to prison has increased.
Okay.
So we've developed very good relationships with the Irish Prison Service in relation to transitioning kids from Overstown into prison. We deliver a Solace transition programme that runs across 6 weeks. We bring prison ACOs, we bring prison, yeah, officers to our placement planning meetings. We introduce them to the kids, we introduce them to the families, and there's a full exchange of information in relation to this person's needs. This is where they are, this is how they are, this is what needs to get looked after.
Mm.
And through that process, we've been able to look after some of the kids that have gone into prison, because some of the kids that have transitioned have been vulnerable, have been high profile, and will need a little bit of minding in the prison. So it's a very good relationship we have with the Irish Prison Service,
yeah,
in relation to managing that transition, because it is a feature of life with kids, yeah, getting longer.
It's a culture shock as well, like it's a completely different, yeah, environment, you know.
And that's part and parcel of trying to bring the prison officer. I don't know what rank they are. I'm getting the ranks wrong, but but they'll come to the meeting. They'll introduce themselves. They'll give the kids a rundown of what prison might be like and how we can soften the blow and how we can help that. And it's worked really well. Some of our kids want to go to prison.
They want, because they aspire, because that's all they know, because from the neighbours.
It's a cultural piece, it's a generational piece, whatever. But they're very few and far, mm-hmm, between. I like the Children's Act 2001 is a very strong act. I've significant authority under that act as the, mm-hmm, director. I can allow a young person stay in Overstown at 18 and a half. Subject to them staying in education and training, etc., etc.
That's fantastic.
It's not a decision that's made lightly,
yeah,
because it comes out of a placement planning meeting. There's a, yeah, recommendation. It goes to a deputy. It comes to me. And if everything matches up, if the kids are hitting their milestones, I'd say, Grant, we leave him stay till he's 18 and a half. There's one young lad up there at the minute who, at 18 and a half, he might have 4 weeks left to do. And I've said to the lads, he's not to go to prison.
Yeah.
You'll find a way to not let him go to prison. So we'll work hard on that, and he'll have a wraparound plan when he's leaving.
Who's the ultimate authority on that then? Would you have to go to the minister, or because you're going from
we'll manage it with the prison service. Yeah. We'll see what's possible from our end, and there'll be fairly robust planning around this. His offences aren't huge; they're not high tariff offences.
I'm sure the IPS would be happy if you were to keep an extra amount of fees.
The IPS is really challenged at the minute in terms of the numbers gone in there. You know how many need to be in there? It's a philosophical question, and ethical question.
You're right, Matt. Just saying, because we were in, like, do you know Paul O'Mahony's report was in the early 90s? Not much research done on the demographics of people in prison.
Yeah.
But he had a report in Mountjoy was made up of young fellas from 6 small areas, not electoral districts, no little estates. Yeah. When I went into prison the first time, and I didn't really have the awareness now, but looking back after studying criminology stuff like that, and the landing that me and Timmy would have been on, there would have been full of fellas from a kilometre radius from where we grew up. The other land was full of travellers, full of fellas from Ballybeg and what. They're the poorest Romanians, Nigerians. Yeah. Is the demographics in Overstown the same, or is it more diverse with middle class or rural? Or
I'd say the majority of them come from the same social demographic background.
Yeah.
There's a couple of outliers. There'll always be a couple of outliers.
Yeah.
No different to any other place detention. Travellers are overrepresented in Overstown. I think in around 30% of our kids are travellers, and we're just developing a partnership with the Traveller Justice Initiative that's going to take place in the coming weeks and months, that we'll have somebody available on site to work specifically around traveller workshops, etc. So to meet their specific set of needs. So
would you ever consider, and they have it up in Castlereagh, something like an equine centre, you know, something like for that would represent the traveller kids, culturists, just make up a big population, you know?
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Like if you had, I know they probably wouldn't come cheap, but it's just something that.
There's equine therapy as well.
So we
for kids.
I mean the animal thing we haven't really gone into it because it brings a whole other different set of needs, I suppose. Yeah. What we're developing now is our whole horticulture piece. So working with clay, that's therapeutic in itself. Yeah. Seeing things grow and ultimately, hopefully, getting a farm to fork experience that the food that we produce will feed the kitchen that feeds the campus. So that's the avenue we've gone. I don't know with the horses, it'd be very tough to get it in there to maintain
it. The whole staff and everything.
Yeah, there's a whole piece of work around that. But we're always looking at different initiatives, new things we can get going. We want to prepare the kids for life after Orbistown by helping them with the behaviour that's caused them get there, by giving them the skills that they need to be it safe pass, manual handling, whatever it is, to get in, to get employment when they leave. And that's really important. Mm. We're not as ethnically diverse, I'd say, as the prisons. We haven't seen that yet, you know. We've summed the numbers to be fairly low throughout the years, but it's not as diverse as the prison population. It's mainly
Irish, white travellers,
Irish from similar backgrounds.
You know, because you have your staff, they work a lot with the kids and stuff like that. They build solid relationships and. I'm sure, like, your staff, when they see some of the kids, their hearts absolutely go out to them because they're looking at where their backgrounds and where they're coming from. So how, when a child goes out, you know, and you know that they're going into a really difficult environment again, how do you deal with that? Like, do you have to step in and say, like, listen, I don't think this is right. This child is going back into that environment there. Mm. Because you're their social worker as well.
Would there be like a case conference with social workers?
So that's the placement planning meeting I'm talking about. That we'd have regular meetings, maybe every 6 to 8 weeks, with everybody who's involved. You'd have Garda case managers, you could have probation, you could have social workers, you could have the MDT, you could have a psychologist, you could have anybody who's involved with the kids and the family. So our job is to get the plan right for when they go home. They have to leave us when the time is up, but we'd never knowingly send someone into a violent place, you know. You because you're working on their exit as soon as they come in, that you're trying to put everything in place to make sure those wraparound services in place for when they leave.
Yeah.
And part and parcel why we'd love to explore this outreach piece is because the longer you can prevent someone from going back into detention, the greater the opportunity you have of keeping them out of detention. So if that support package is right and it's in place when they leave, well then they have half an opportunity, you know. The big challenge is kids going back to families, kids going back to communities. If the work is not done with the family, if the work is not done with the community, well then that presents a challenge. So that's an area of development, is the whole family piece. And we're bringing the families more and more into it. I mean, in terms of participation, in terms of what works, in terms of getting their feedback from how they feel things have been. So that's really important because that describes the next leg of our development.
And sometimes the families mightn't have that awareness themselves that there's something going wrong inside the house.
No, it can be.
You know, they might, because they're it's the intergenerational thing.
Yeah. And it can be very hard because if you're out of the house for 9 months and you're going back, there could be a new partner.
Yeah.
There could be a new child. It could be in a new house. There could be all those different elements.
There could be more addictions in the house.
And
you know,
they could be getting on grand. That all the madness has gone out of the house, and you come back in and be like, you know.
You know, we've kids who say, you know, if I wasn't here, I'd be dead. We've parents saying, oh, thanks very much, I'm getting a breather, this is great.
Yeah.
So all that's really important as well, at a very, very, very fundamental level, that you're able to allow people breathe. You're able to allow a kid feel safe, not under threat, because then you can start to work with them, because if they're carrying that around forever, they're looking over their shoulder all the time, there's no amount of work is going to stick. So the work that goes on with the care staff, the teachers, the new staff, that sticks over time, you know. It's you're sowing seeds every day and you're looking to affect change, you know.
Do you have any talented musicians up there?
So so music could be big. Music, and we're looking at something from a drama perspective as well. So the kids do lots of fundraising for different charities and stuff. And one of the companies they work with, it'd be Pieta House, you know, and they have regular fundraising events for them. And so the karaoke machine comes out then, and you can't get them off the stage.
Did you join yourself, would you?
Not in a long time.
Get out the guitar.
Once upon a time, but...
I was a bit of a Lou Kelly.
I retired. Because, you know, years and years ago, we used to have a Christmas event. We used to call it the X Factor or whatever.
Yeah.
And the kids and the staff all performed. And it was, you know, to be a Christmas thing, it was a huge event. And we're moving back towards something like that with the kids, with these little mini and micro events that are going on. Mm. There's a couple of lads into rap. Yeah. There's a couple of lads into the digital music. So it's a big angle. So anything that hooks them, our job is to find the hook.
Mm. Yeah.
Because if you're interested in it, if we know what you're interested in, well, let's build it. Let's see what's possible. Do some work with... The books, the words, the Roddy Doyle thing. Anyway,
creative writing.
Yeah. Do some work with those guys as well. We've a couple of drama teachers around the place, or you know, a couple of artists. So it's all those different elements that they've never been exposed to before. That actually, hang on a second. The Emma Art Exhibition said, "Look, there's a couple of talented artists here." The Bloom Garden thing said, "There's a couple of talented gardeners here." So it's building their profile. Yeah. It's changing the narrative around actually. These kids have something. You said something earlier on.
Mm.
There's no bad people.
No.
You know, these kids haven't got a break.
Yeah.
The supports haven't been there for them, and it's our job to do that.
So, we're talking about talents here, like, and something popped into my head. We all know, like, travellers love boxing.
Yeah,
I'd say you have some fantastic boxers up there, because even where we come from, James, like, we see some of the most talented kids who are travellers in the boxing, and when they get to a certain age, then it's left behind, because they move into different things and whatever else, you know. So, and soccer, like, how many guys did we meet through the years went across the water and got caught up in drinking drugs?
I ever come across was in Cork Prison.
But it's cyclical, you see.
Yeah.
This year might be soccer, next year might be boxing or whatever.
Yeah.
Years and years ago, when I had black hair, I used to spar with a fella in Trinity House who was an All Ireland champion from Galway. And I used to have to say to him, "Go easy now," because I couldn't see the punches coming. And he stayed at it for a long time and did really well. We've boxing one night a week. I think it's moving to two nights a week in the coming weeks.
Nice one.
And we've a very good trainer on site who's a lot of work with the lads, who's travelled his own journey as well. So it's trying to hook them. And, you know, we Oberstown in its growth and its development has travelled a journey. The first few years were very tough because we were amalgamating our services. So trying to bring something like boxing into the campus was a challenge, you know. But the rules are very strict.
Mm.
And if you break rule 2 or rule 9, whatever it is, you're banned from the boxing club.
Yeah.
That's it, because it's a discipline. Mm. That's what it's about. It's how to hold yourself, how to manage yourself, how to mind yourself, all those elements.
Yeah.
One of the greatest sportsmen I ever met came from a place called Newcastle West. He could turn his hand to anything. He could hurl, he could play football, he could play soccer, he could play table tennis, could play like basketball, could do anything. But as a 15 and 16 year old, he was absolutely wired.
Yeah.
You know, and he's half settled now, you know. He's done a little bit of time in prison, but he's kind of doing okay now. But so you've met talented guys, they're out there, you know, and it's to hook them.
So going back into the education, okay.
Yeah.
Do you draw more water?
No, go on.
Grab the water here from, please, lads. So going back into the education, a lot of these kids probably left school at a young age, okay, because of maybe for reasons that they weren't able to get an education because they might have something going on for them, like a learning difference, like dyslexia, dyspraxia, whatever it may be, and then ADHD and other stuff. Do you get the kids up there do you get them assessed for all these different things? Because I know for a fact, when a child gets that diagnosis, it helps them massively, not just on an academic level where but on a personal level as well. It explains that they're actually not stupid.
Yes.
So is that something
that's
that you
part
get?
Of the whole process?
Is
and
it?
What are our trends that tell us that? Yeah, lots of them have learning disabilities. Some of them have physical disabilities. Some of them are way, way behind in education because there's been a gap because they haven't gone. So we're able to address that through the individual education plan, through the individual placement plan. We're trying to, and sometimes the penny will drop for a fella and there's a different way of learning things. And I suppose that's the skill set of some of the teachers and some of the care staff that work up there, that they find different ways of getting there with the kids.
Mm.
You know, you could be learning maths and music. You could be learning English in woodwork. You could be learning woodwork in English. So it's cross-curricular. You're trying to bring everything in to try and target it. So someone doesn't feel vulnerable. So someone doesn't feel, actually, I don't know the answer to this.
Yeah.
We'll help them get there. And I suppose that's the real skill that some of the staff possess up there. And it's intensive work. You have to put time, effort, and energy into it.
What's the capacity of it and how many spaces have you got left, or are you always full?
So we've 46 spaces. We've 40 lads' beds and six girls' beds. And over the last couple of months, we've been operating at about 40, 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, it probably wouldn't have been mid-30s. I don't know what's behind a little bit of the upward surge, you know.
Maybe backlog of court cases.
Whether it's a post-COVID piece, we're not sure, but... It's not different to anywhere. When you're operating at capacity, it puts an added strain, an added pressure.
There's no room for error, like if you have an influx, like
And what's going on around the place? So we've very good relationships with the courts and trying to keep an eye out on high tariff offences that might be coming away. Because if God forbid there was a very significant event this evening, we'd have to find a bed. We'd have to provide a bed for someone. So that would require a bit of work at our end to see how that works, because We don't want to be ejecting lads before they've fully got there. We don't want to create that revolving door piece.
But do you do like a temporary release, a TR, like they would in the prison if you're trying to free up space?
So within the legislation, there are a number of sections that would allow for different permitted absences. And that's what we would do. If there was a guy who was doing really well, he was hitting the mark, everything was set up, maybe at 4 to 6 weeks to go, he'd be saying, grand, we leave you out under supervision and we'd manage that. So you create some space like that.
The supervision goes to the probation?
Sometimes it'd be done with us.
So you look after them and we could do it as well.
So we need to do a little bit more work on that to develop that a little more robustly, I suppose. But during COVID, we made very good use of permitted absences because we had kids operating at a high level. And in terms of all the contingency plans around managing COVID outbreaks, we had to look at that. So, and it worked very, very well throughout that period. So kids who go on permitted absence tend to do well because they're coming towards the end of the detention order. Everything's been set up for them. And if they're still engaged with whoever's looking after them, well then they're good to go.
We'd have to go up there at some stage to do a podcast.
Yeah.
Not with the kids,
no. No, I tell you, you'd be more than welcome.
With your staff,
because I'm talking away here, you know. And
we could record a live one and have them in the audience,
That would be amazing.
I mean, I spoke to someone today and I said, I live in a world of possibilities, So we'll explore those options and see what's possible, because I'm talking here now and you don't fully have the context of it. It's in a rural location, North County Dublin. Bright, colourful buildings. Yes, there's walls and fences. They're necessary because it's a secure place. But I suppose one of the key lines in the HICRA reports and people who visit the place, they talk about the warm relationships they feel across the place, the warmth in the place, the genuineness that people are there for the kids. If you were there and you went there for the kids, you wouldn't be there a long time because you have to invest in them. I talk about Lou Reed, you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
If you put time, effort and energy into kids, they'll grow.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then what are you at, you know? Yeah. You really need to consider what you're doing in the place.
Maybe we'll go up there and we'll document it and show people, you know,
be delighted to have you up there at some stage,
Thanks for talking to you,
you know what, there was a lot of information covered there, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was very educational and informative.
I'm sure, mainstream society, I've probably never heard somebody talk of what facilities like for somebody young.
And I don't think they have. And, you know, the garden in bloom at the weekend. So this was a huge punt we took at getting young people involved with a gardener, the design, getting the concept, getting the process and developing. If there's stuff there in the garden, Matt, we'll have a look at it in a minute. We'll just show you. But maybe 120,000 people went through bloom at the weekend.
Jeez.
And if 100,000 of them passed our garden, they were met by our staff who told them what we do, who told them what the garden about, and the general response by 99% of the people was, wow, didn't have a clue, never knew. We don't wear uniforms, we're not sure, Mr. and Miss, I'm Damien, the gaffer. Whatever they want to call me, a different
depends
price.
On the mood they're in that day.
But I do a lap of the pitch as often as I can, get to meet as many kids as I can on a regular basis, because it's important that I know them, I know where they're at, and see how their development is going. And it's that personal touch that every member of staff brings with them to the place.
Yeah,
that's really important.
Yeah.
And that's what gets us through the difficult times. Because the kids come back, you know.
Yeah.
The kids they feel safe to have a go at us sometimes, because we're not gonna hurt them, we're not gonna harm them, but they'll come back to us because you have that conversation, you create that space.
When they do well later in life, like myself and Timmy and all the people we interview, you remember the people that was good to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Our teachers, prison officers, youth workers, you know, when you get older and you think fondly, and then when you bump into them, it's a lovely kind of moment, you know what I mean?
It just takes one. It's like Shawnee, Damien.
Followed up by an insult.
Because I was anxious and he was anxious, you know? Like, what's this going to be like, you know?
I'm
thinking, wow.
He's over in Thailand now, lapping up the sun.
He's done very well.
He is, fair play to him. We were up in Dublin with him a few weeks ago there, and in fairness, he showed us around the place, and he has a lot of good stuff going on for him, which is great.
We're going to get him back as well, you know, because his story to the kids, someone who was there, who went through an awful lot, who's come back and is now out the other side, like...
Yeah.
Your story. That's gold.
Yeah.
That's gold. These kids need to know there's a way out.
Well, we'll come up, we'll make it happen. Yeah. Thanks for time, Damien.
No bother. Thanks so much.
Thanks everybody for watching and listening. We see you all soon.
Slán.
Good luck.
The Toonaries podcast is proudly sponsored by Inline Eco, your trusted partner in asbestos removal and re-roofing services across Ireland. Your peace of mind and safety are our top priorities. For more information, visit inlineeco.ie.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.